Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Brandon. Welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
Hello.
Winter, I was so proud of myself that I was going to deliver your full new married name all on my own today without it in the script, but it's in the script, so.
You did a very great, perfect job once.
I had a crutch. We've also got journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hello there, Guy.
Hello, Margaret.
Well, hi. I had a 3-hour nap today.
Whoa, what happened?
I was reborn. I was reborn and my skin is glowing. Right, guys? My skin
is
glowing.
Thank you.
Yeah. You don't look close to dead like we usually keep you, so that's great.
Exactly. It's like my liver has finally gotten back to working order.
I mean, naps really are the best.
They are God's gift.
Though,
they are.
I have to tell you, summertime naps, I get this like specific neck sweat situation
that
I don't really enjoy.
Me neither.
And we've got pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Thompson.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers.
Karen, how are you doing?
I'm doing fairly well, actually. You know, it's just the hustle, the bustle. It's autumn.
Yeah.
Is it autumn?
I mean, not really technically.
Not technically.
California has different season rules, I maintain, than the rest of the world. I think that for us, autumn begins on the first day of September. I think that winter.
September is the hottest month in Los Angeles.
Yeah. But our autumn is different.
It's been pretty chill here.
Yes.
It's been decent, but usually it's a raging brown cloud of dust at this point.
Yeah. That is true. That
the
is true
signal of autumn is when the last two lesbian pool party invites come in.
Yes.
And there's one this weekend and one next weekend. And I think after that, it's like, you know, on to...
Stay at your own home and entertain yourself.
Absolutely.
Weddings in the desert season?
Weddings in the desert and two-play, like, cashmere from Uniqlo.
Yeah. Mm. A beautiful culture. Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be talking about Destination Wedding, that movie that is on your video on demand asking you for $15, and we're going to tell you whether it is worth $15, and we'll take a look at what Gen Xers are up to these days, and the answer is not preparing for retirement. but before that, we have some very important business to attend to. We have decided to dismiss All Abouts this week.
Although we get, I think, at the end of the show, the option to do an All About or a Jam.
The option of doing an All About or a Jam. Guess which one I'm going to take. You guys, we have a report from the nominating committee for the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval. So before we begin, we have to officially gavel things in. Gavel, gavel, gavel. We have to see if we have a... I, as presiding adjudicator, must determine if we have a quorum present to hand out a Pop Rocket Seal of Approval. Winter Mitchell.
Rohrbaugh.
I didn't do it. Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
Aye.
Margaret Wappler.
Aye, my lord.
Karen Thompson.
I'm here.
A quorum being present, we can now turn to the question of the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval. Now, Margaret, do you just want to recap for everyone what the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval is?
Yes, it is basically our version of the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval. In other words, we trust you. We think you're not going to mess up culture too much anytime soon. You are a good creator. You have done good things in the culture and with your own artwork, and we will stand behind you. We do have to debate the merits, of course, of each person that we nominate. The Rock was brought up last time. Winter was...
I object.
Now,
to the ruling?
To
or
the
to
ruling.
Him?
So now Margaret is officially reading us the minutes of the last one.
Yes.
What was the official determination?
Yes. The determination was that he did not pass muster.
You're out of order. Okay. You're all out of order.
Will someone move to approve the minutes?
We will not relitigate this.
What do they do in the UK?
Okay. Winter so moves. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. The minutes being approved, we now turn to the nominating committee for their report. Karen Thompson, as chairperson of the nominating committee, please give your report.
We received numerous luminous nominations. There was vigorous debate on the Facebook page about what constituted an appropriate Pop Rocket Seal of Approval. Mm-hmm. And I mean, again, there were so many names. And one of the things that, as the chair of the nominating committee, I decided to do in my special Lord Undersecretary powers was to cut through the numerous sub-debates and sub-threads and to see who passionately advocated on behalf of certain candidates, even beyond the official nominating threads.
Okay.
And this is how the name under submission tonight is Rachel Bloom.
Rachel Bloom, star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, her name has been placed into official consideration. I now turn to the rest of the panel and say, who will act as snob's advocate for this debate?
I'll do it, but it's a special kind of snob advocacy. It's apathetic snob advocacy.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Karen, why should we consider Rachel Bloom?
First and foremost, I do want to give the history of the nominating process.
Yeah.
On July 30th, 2018, Rocketeer Emma Liz Simon officially entered Rachel Bloom's name in for nomination in its own thread on our Facebook page. This was within, like, practically hours of the episode that we last released.
Awesome.
Yes. And so 112 Rocketeers liked Emma's post and added very cute GIFs to her second her endorsement.
Let's litigate this.
And on July 31st, in the first official Pop Rocket Seal of Approval thread started by Rachel Rosing, Rachel Bloom's name came up at least four times, with only Pedro Davila questioning whether or not she has a large enough body of work to assess.
Yes, Pedro. Yes.
And but one of the things that I also want to bring into this nomination of Rachel Bloom is the fact that the real criteria under debate was whether or not we should award our first seal to someone who is already iconic, who already has, like, much circulation in popular culture. What good would the seal do somebody like Cher,
right,
or Rihanna, or these amazing figures? Shouldn't we give some shine on people who are there hustling away, laboring? And so these are the official reasons that I entered her name into nomination.
Margaret, all right, so as apathetic advocate, mm-hmm, what are your primary, what is the state's case that she should not be recipient of the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval?
Well, my argument primarily rests with what the criteria is, not so much Rachel Bloom herself. Rachel Bloom, I find inoffensive. I find her in lots of ways charming and lovely.
I also think delightfully offensive in a lot of ways. Like, she's somebody who takes risks and takes stands, you know?
Yes. I mean, she has done a good job on her show of talking about mental illness, of grabbing a anti-feminist term and totally turning it on its head. She has spoken out about her own issues with depression and anxiety and all of that. And I think those are all very commendable things. But she only has one body of work to really, you know, critique. Like, she basically has four seasons of this show, and though it has many beloved fans, it is one of the lowest rated shows on TV. And it's at the bottom of the barrel for CW.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's no Arrow.
But so, its cultural impact is huge.
I know.
And I will argue on that, but I will let you speak your apathy first.
I agree with you that it is, the cultural impact is significant. But this is what we have to talk about. Are we going to give a Pop Rocket seal of approval to someone who has niche appeal, which I think Rachel Bloom has? Or are we going to give it to somebody who has touched many more hearts and minds than Rachel Bloom has gotten the chance to do so far? Also, second, I believe we're also talking about, is this like basically a sophomore award? Do we have to have a second body of work to really consider them as a true seal of approval candidate? Because, you know, what if she gets another show and she just hits the skids, which she could.
It. These are totally possible.
These are all procedural arguments from Margaret Wappler, and I'm not saying that they're invalid procedural arguments. I'm just saying you're in no way stabbing at the body of her work, you know?
There's
a larger body of work. I actually became aware of her through You Can Touch My Boobies, which was a video that she did. Fuck Me, Rain Bradbury. I do love the fact that she is one of our YouTube star, like she wasn't a YouTube star.
Yeah, pretty much an early YouTube star, though, like an innovator of the form.
Who managed to get a chance at making it in sort of like, you know, more established television, and didn't just create a show and get a show on the air, but kept a show on the air for 4 years that managed to be like socially and culturally relevant and wasn't sort of just playing the game of somebody else's show. I think one of the biggest things recommending her is the nuance of world creation she did in putting together a show that didn't look like shows before it. She didn't show up and say, I'm going to put me at the center of the sitcom we've all seen before. Like, she, like, celebrated the Inland Empire. Like, she said...
the San Gabriel Valley.
Yeah.
SGV/IE.
Like, I don't know that Wes Covina deserves her, but fair point.
She was a bold innovator in the field of, like, Filipino-American frat boys on television, which is, like...
She exposed the nation to hot Asian male abs before Crazy Rich Asians was even a twinkle in anyone's eye.
Yes. I mean, would we have a Jason Mendoza on The Good Place?
We would
if
not.
If we had not first had Josh Chan.
I like her. I watch the show. I've seen every episode. I don't watch the show because of her. I watch it in spite of her. Because ultimately, her story is usually the central storyline. But I watch it more for the people around her. So for that, the characters around Rachel in the show, I find very compelling. Some of these secondary, third characters have some of the most clever, interesting, funny, off-the-cuff commentary, adding to an already ridiculous situation. Also, again, I've been saying this since the beginning of the show, it's more interesting for me to watch a show with diversity because it feels comfortable, but it's not the first thing I look for. Because for me, diversity and inclusivity is the norm. If for all these other crazy fucks out here, it's not. So I'm not going to be like, cool, Asian abs. My first crush was an Asian boy. So it's not going to be like, ooh, Wes Covina. I would never go there. I don't even know where it is. I know where it is. I just won't go there. I'm just saying, like, those things weren't...
Fighting words.
those things aren't unique to me. I was looking for... I often do tolerate shows where the person who's the central figure is really annoying, but because they're the nucleus of the entire narrative, I will suffer through them in spite of her, because the rest of the show kind of works well together.
I'm going to throw to a clip for this. She learned Tagalog for this fucking show. Let's hear it.
Mabuhay.
Nice to meet you.
Natutwa, akong, makilala, kayo.
And then she also learned how to make Filipino food. Play me that clip, please.
Is it lumpia?
Ooh, something smells weird in here.
Oh, well, it's a Filipino dish called dinaguan. It consists of pork cooked in pork's blood. You want to try some?
Thanks, but I think I'm all full up from the wonderful smell.
You know what? That's just your culturally insensitive taste buds talking.
I mean, it's not lumpia, it's dinaguan. Also, like... there's Renee Gube who writes for the show.
Yeah.
But like the case in point being, she had this opportunity, this occasions to actually make herself be the center of the show. In many respects, she's actually not, right? Like that's why we watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And beyond that, like, you know, the narratives that and the actors who she's given like employment opportunities to would have never had these opportunities were it not for the fact that she's like, I'm going to make this outlandish show set in a suburb of Los Angeles that nobody cares about, that Winter Mitchell won't even visit. That is majority Filipino-American, and I will, you know, like, employ Filipino-American actors, icons like Leah Salonga, in addition to unknowns like Vincent Rodriguez III. I will bring people who are from the theater world who people would never tolerate on a screen and, like, bring them and show their talents
off. The fact that everybody has to have, like, legitimate singing chops, meaning that we got, what's his name from Cinderella? The guy who went off to business school.
Oh, yeah, the guy who played Greg.
Yes, but like that clip that Karen just played was from the episode where she gave us the concept of Gives Good Parent.
Yeah.
Like when you think about like
Give Good Parent.
Like
yeah.
The number of just sort of, in creating these songs, she's really put her finger so frequently on ideas from our culture that are so zeitgeisty and so perfect. And I feel like a lot of other more popular shows give you one or two of those a season and they're considered iconic. And she's giving us, you know, a couple an episode.
And may I address some of our most disgruntled Rocketeers? That is the bisexual crowd.
Uh-oh.
Uh-huh.
And I will say that Rachel Bloom gave us the bisexual anthem.
So if you ask me how I'm doing, I'm feeling peppy, sprightly, spry. I'm good, getting by. I'm getting by. And it's something I'd like to demystify. It's not a phase. I'm not confused. Not indecisive. I don't have the God I choose blues. I don't care if you wear high heels or a tie. You might just catch my eye because I'm definitely bi.
And also came to Pride and stood on a fucking pyramid and sang songs, like did a bisexual float and like sang songs from atop what I believe was a gigantic purple pyramid for the entire like run of Santa Monica Boulevard. This is a bitch who's huffing, you know?
She has so much hustle.
There's no question that she is a very, very hard worker. But I do still wonder, okay, addressing that she has done other work, I would say though that those YouTube videos were basically like an audition reel for getting a show on CW. Uh-huh. It's not really a different kind of product than what she's already making.
Oh, you mean she like showed everybody what she was capable of?
I mean, it's great.
When Hollywood didn't know what to do with her?
Which is awesome, but yes. It's not different. It's not showing a different side of her. There's nothing about the I Want to Fuck Ray Bradbury that gives me any slight different angle on her than her show.
To the procedural point, I will make this counter argument. If we aren't taking risks on people, what the fuck does this mean?
I agree. I mean, let's talk about it. Are we willing to say that if you have... I mean, I don't disagree with anything you guys are laying out about her. Like, she is exemplary in so many different ways. But I do think that she is still, you know, she's a fledgling. And are we okay with saying, okay, this one body of work you have? Because let's be real, it is one body of work. That's enough? Because that is then going to go into our arguments for all other nominees in the future. You have to have one body of work. What if they have one body of work and then they fuck it up afterwards? And we said we can't pull this award, right?
But that is the risk that we take. Yes. And I think that in terms of not being able to pull this award, I think that Rachel Bloom is a reliable character around like her politics, around the amount of labor she's put into the Me Too and Time's Up movements, and the amount of labor she's put into not only representing diverse storylines, but creating diverse crews and casts.
Winter Mitchell, your concluding statements.
Here's the thing. I am not a musical person. So I am.
Yeah, so what do we do with Rachel Bloom if we're not a musical person, which I'm not either?
I'm not a musical person, so I don't really know. Like, everything you both reference, it's not like it completely goes over my head. It stops and hits me in the forehead, then I wipe it off. Like, I don't want to think that hard about it because I'm narrow-minded and I'm like, I'm watching TV. So I just kind of want to watch a sitcom. And then if I want to go to a musical, I'll buy the tickets. I'll go up to Pantages. And then if I want to go see a theatrical thing, I'll do that. It doesn't mean that I can't expand. It just means it's a lot to take in. And it's a roller coaster watching this show. There's so much going on. It's, what is it, 45 minutes?
But I also think that's reflective of all of the directions that her career could go. This is somebody who could go off.
So we've just watched a four-year audition.
Karen Tongson. As the official representative of the nominating committee, I would like you to make your final push for why Rachel Bloom should receive the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval.
Rachel Bloom is not an established icon, and therefore the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval may actually mean something to this person's career and future. I'm not sure if that is a plus or a minus. But also, I want to say that she puts her money where her mouth is. She is a hustler who not only hustles for herself, who not only engages in all that hoofing and that tapping and that singing and dancing to make Rachel Bloom a famous person, but to bring people like Donna Lynn Champlin, who plays Paula, and others who would otherwise be doing like kind of some secondary roles or some leading roles on different Broadway stages or touring companies around the country onto a platform that gives them a much larger audience. She has, in a very responsible way, brought to the forefront Filipino-American stories, narratives, and made Filipinos be at the center of desire. And I think that that's like something that actually hasn't really happened ever before on television. And I think that she is partly responsible for a Jason Mendoza on The Good Place, for the different directions that we're going in other shows that do that. I think that she introduced to the American consciousness the Asian bro.
Also, cast a gay man as the straight male lead of her show.
Yeah.
Like.
Anyway, so all to say, she is a friend of a friend of Dorothy's. She's a friend of my people, the Filipinos, and the friends of Dorothy's. And I think that she puts the work in and her hustle, her pure pluck and hustle to get a frickin' show on any network with the kind of zany plot line and concept that she has is worthy of recognition.
Margaret Wappler, as the snob's advocate, you get the final word.
Look, Rachel Bloom, I like you. I think you are very talented. I think you've got great hustle. I recognize, even though I'm not a musical theater person, that you've pushed the boundaries of the form. And I want to see you succeed 100%. But and it's not always easy being the snob's advocate. You know, I didn't really want to do this role today, but I had to. Somebody had to fall on that sword.
Yeah.
So I will just say that I'm willing to give you this award, but my contingency is that you replicate a second time a show or whatever body of work you decide to go on to next that is just as interesting, just as dynamic, just as genre pushing, and you do it with the good politics that you've shown you can do with this first one. And then I will feel 100% solid in this mm-hmm. award. But right mm-hmm. now, I'm just on a little bit of shaky ground still with it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Debate being closed. It is now time to vote. The question before us is, should Rachel Bloom received the first official Pop Rocket seal of approval. Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh, how do you vote?
Nay.
Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh votes nay. Margaret Wappler.
I vote nay.
Karen Tongson.
Yay.
A strong yay from Karen Tongson. I also vote yay. The votes in the affirmative and negative being the same, the motion does not pass. Also, Karen Tongson is crestfallen.
I put so much work into gathering the Rocketeers nominations and you've completely flouted their wills and desires. Look, let me just put it there.
We can't leave.
Now you know how I felt when I got railroaded into a Cardi B summer jam, okay? All right, you are listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back after this with to talk about Destination Wedding.
Hi, I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
And we host When Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting.
Whether you are a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent.
I, before children,
yeah,
definitely didn't think it was going to be this hard. Yeah. I'm going to ask my children to do X, Y, or Z,
yeah,
and they're going to do it.
And I'm going to lead by example. They're yeah. going to know. They're going to do it because yeah. they're going to see me doing it.
Right.
And children naturally want to please adults.
Yeah. You know what? I'll make it kind of fun.
Yeah.
And that'll be fun.
Totally.
But I won't necessarily use bribes. And I would never use threats.
Right.
That was my pre-child thinking.
Yes.
And like if somebody came in and saw us doing this,
yeah,
they would judge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job.
Find us on MaximumFun.org, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
Margaret Wappler Bloom.
And Karen Tongson Rodriguez III.
I would like to offer a new rule for the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval. Are you guys ready for it?
Yeah.
Anyone whose name has been placed in official consideration for the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval gains voting power in all future decisions for the Pop Rocket Seal of Approval.
Oh, I like it.
If The Rock wants to come here and vote on whether he or Rachel Bloom get a Pop Rocket seal of approval, he has that power.
I like it so much. I also think Rachel Bloom, upon a second work of art, yes, will be reappraised.
Okay, we will reconsider this motion when we get more information. Pop Rocket's work never ends, you guys. All right. So Destination Wedding is a romantic comedy, to use the term in its broadest sense, starring Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder as two people who are going to a wedding in Paso Robles on the California coast, who basically spend the entire wedding hating each other in classic rom-com fashion, but also talking to no one else except for each other. Yes, other people are photographed, but no one else talks.
There are only two voices, people.
Why isn't it a fucking stage play?
Because they got Winona and Keanu to agree to be in it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, to me, it felt like someone who was writing aspirationally as if they were making a Whit Stillman film.
Yes, so it has that kind of like pop culture-y, chunky dialogue from the 90s, like Whit Stillman did, or
Before Sunrise and all those movies.
And Quentin Tarantino. Like, sort of, Quentin Tarantino took us to, like, the edgier, sort of, like, you know, more blood-curdling version, but it was still sort of like, we're chit-chatting about royales with cheese. And this has a lot of conversations about, getting your toenails clipped and...
But even not even that, though. I mean, I think that one of the most disturbing aspects of watching this film... Let me just preface by saying the reason that I think anybody showed any interest in watching this film was because there was all of this adorable lead-up with Keanu and Winona interviews, where they're like, we've always had a crush on each other, we've always loved each other.
They had to do that because of the movie.
Yeah, but people were freaking sold on that. And in fact, the trailer...
They had gotten accidentally married on the set of Dracula.
Yeah.
And in fact, like, everybody's like, oh, wow, it's our faves from Gen X. They're so lovely. Winona's had a second life on Stranger Things. Keanu is just like always Keanu and adorable. But I think that in particular, Keanu was horribly miscast as some kind of weird, searingly intellectual, like emotionally divested person.
Well, it was sort of stunning to realize that these two people so associated with Gen X are so bad at that particular style of dialogue. There was no variation. There was no energy to it. I have a pitch for how you fix Destination Wedding.
Please tell me.
It only takes two words.
Whoa.
They are Parker Posey. Fucking put Parker Posey in that and let her toy around with those words. Let her toy around with those sentences. That makes it an okay film.
If it were Parker Posey and Winona Ryder, not the other way around.
No, I kept trying.
Would have been more interesting.
Yeah.
I kept trying to listen to Keanu Reeves and just think, what would Chris Eigenman have done if he were talking about cashews like this?
Are you talking about Manhattan? You're talking about...
Metropolitan.
Metropolitan. I was going to call it Manhattan. Metropolitan. Yeah.
But it's also like faux Woody Allen.
I was going to say, that's who I kept thinking of. Even the title credits were very in his style.
Yeah.
And the music. It also reminded me a little bit of Sideways, but I might just be like getting that cross with like Wine Country.
Yeah.
So Robles.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you guys responded more negatively to Keanu.
I haven't heard my opinion yet.
Because I bristled more at Winona. I felt like her Winona-ness just overtook the role to such an extent that I never bought her as a lawyer, B, like anyone who just exists in like our regular sphere of life. Like she's just such a zany, kooky, constantly intense person that like she can only be in a Stranger Things type of role.
A rom-com in the underneath or like the upside down.
Exactly. She's like, she's just not regular gal enough for me to buy her going to it. Also, just the whole setup of the movie was absurd and ludicrous. She broke up with this guy, or he broke up with her 6 years ago. They sued each other and she's going to his wedding.
Well, the groom of the wedding. wedding, right? Not Keanu's character. Yeah. But
not Keanu's character, yes, yes. They're both at this wedding because Keanu is half-brothers with the groom, and she is the former fiancé of the groom. And she had such a bad falling out with him that she took him to court. And it's just like, there's no way. I don't care how fucking bat crazy you are not going to that wedding. Right. He's not inviting you to that wedding.
Neither Keanu nor Winona gave any specificity to these line readings. They never felt like, yeah, here's my quirk, here's my notion. It just felt like they were reading them like they were reciting their Torah portion. And it, one thing it made me think of when it comes to off-brand Woody Allen is the 1990, I think, movie Miami Rhapsody, where David Frankel,
yeah,
the guy who directed The Devil Wears Prada, basically did his stab at sort of like a fun, swinging romantic comedy that had that kind of like Allen-esque dialogue, but was like a little bit sexier and a little bit more fun. It had Sarah Jessica Parker in it, but it was full of people who like could pull off the dialogue. And this is simultaneously,
except for Naomi Campbell.
Yes, that's true. Like, but that movie,
I'll nominate her for a Pop Rocket seal of approval next.
That movie was a little bit before the wave on sort of like Gen X pop culture-y dialogue. And this one just comes into a world where we all know it so well that it's got to be good. Like, I can't decide whether those jokes were all bad or if they just never sold a one of them.
We haven't even talked about the... This is the only part that, obviously, because I'm a horn dog, I like.
Yes,
that...
I was just about to bring this up, Winter.
Okay,
this
good.
Is the only
part. Yes.
Yes,
because... This is the only part I liked.
The only part I like because, you know...
You guys like that shit? Okay, good.
Yes.
We like, I know.
You like heterosexual
sex. That
was so awkward and horrible.
But that's why it was great.
Okay. No, that's why it was great, because that's usually what it is, especially if you don't really know somebody who's trying to be like all, you know, and then you're like, oh, why not? And I mean, I've had those moments multiple times in life, and I just feel like watching it was it was interesting to watch something that, first of all, have had sex in that region outdoors.
Not a good region to do that.
Not a
lots
good region.
Lots of prickles.
A lot of prickles.
Dry grass.
Dry grass.
Yeah.
But I will say, not with my husband, I will say that it was interesting to watch them just have just basic ass, not even for like shits and giggles, basic ass hetero sex in the middle of a
yes.
field.
Can
like,
it was
all
long,
the design.
Will someone recap what happens
yeah.
for the people who,
yeah.
so many people who haven't seen this film?
So they decide to finally bail on the wedding. They go for a walk in wine country and they run into a mountain lion and they start freaking out and they run away from the mountain lion and they end up in some grass. And Winona's kind of turned on because he like saved her a bit. He like, you know, scared the mountain lion away. And they admit to each other they haven't had sex in eons, and they sort of very, you know, just on a gentleman's agreement are like, okay, we'll go ahead and have sex. Like, at that point, they're not agreeing that they like each other. It's just sex. And, yeah, it's just like classic missionary-style sex in the weeds of the wine country that they're in. And, I mean, the reason I liked it is because the movie was obsessed with doing long takes, and a lot of times I feel like the long takes didn't benefit this movie because yeah. there wasn't enough, like, going on. But I think you can do a long take on sex and people having sex that's awkward and strange and, like, muddlesome, and it just was more successful to me as, like, a scene.
The way that it was shot actually to me seemed awkward because he seemed off alignment.
Like, he was off alignment. He was definitely
yeah.
humping
he
her
was
waist.
Way. He was totally. I was just like
somewhere else.
But it was framed again. It was framed poorly. But yeah. as someone who has had clothed outdoor sex,
yeah.
it's
you, awkward.
It's
bad
not
alignment.
Look good.
It's not
gonna
look good.
I do think that so much of the film was like physically attractive, but God, more fucking instrumental music over quiet moments or long shots of the city. Jesus Christ.
I mean, it looked very chintzy.
Yeah.
It looked like it was shot in a weekend.
It
like
was
on a
shot
super
in
low
9
budge.
Days, by the way.
Okay, that's clear.
But also, like, let me just ask, like,
it was shot in 9 days.
Yeah, it was shot in 9 days. Like, bless in a broader him. Cultural sphere, like, what does this say to us about, like, you know, our heroes are, like, pinups of Gen X.
Yeah.
And they're aging. I mean, the other, like, one of the lovely things that Sarah, my dear wife, said to me while we were watching this, you know, she's like, I can't believe we're watching this. And then she's like, it's 90 minutes of vocal fry. You know, it's just like 90 minutes of vocal fry. But also, like, you know, what do we make of the fact that, like, there was some level of anticipation, at least in my generational group. People were excited about seeing Winona and Keanu together. Everybody was, like, kind of hyped about that. People wanted the romance of Keanu and Winona. But also, I think, like what does it say to us about, like, this kind of generation that's kind of aging out of, I don't know, relevance, cuteness, meet cute, whatever
Can
it is?
Well, I'm just going to interject something really quickly that just occurred to me that, like, in a way, the indiness of this movie, we're all kind of, like, over it, whereas in 1998, we would have been just charmed to bits about it. Like, shot in 9 days and the just two people and their dialogue and all these kinds of things. I think it's also about that movie.
Gonzo
that
filmmaking.
Style of movie that we've also kind of aged out of in a certain way.
But we've got the Before Sunrise, Sunset, like, all of those movies, which aren't just better, they also, like, check in and watch these people age and mature.
Yeah, well, it's like a life project at this point, which garners definitely some kind of respect.
Like, the love affair that this movie has with rom-com structure, in a way that...
Hate fuck.
It was a hate fuck. It was a hate fuck of rom-com structure because it was so fucking... It was fucking tied to it while understanding none of the charm or subtlety. Like, it was...
But that's the reality. I mean, that's the reality of love. Like, I'm learning this every day. It's not a fucking fairy tale. Some days, I want to choke the shit out of you.
But that's not a meet cute. You know what I mean? It's like, I love, like, depictions of the everyday, like, dilemmas and kind of the wear and tear of, like, the dailiness of being committed to someone. But this is like, these are people who didn't, this is like the structure of a romantic comedy. They didn't know each other. They met each other. And then they're supposed to find something, like, I don't know, tingly or exciting or whatever about each other. And I never got that from this movie. And part of me was, like, totally stressed out about, like, have we, like, just completely abdicated the sense of romance? Even these two very romantic, cute figures who we have a long cinematic history of finding romantic with each other. Like, do we just, like, let go of that?
But part of it is that, like, you've got two people in their mid-40s. Go to fucking His Girl Friday. Go to, like, Adam's Rib. Take these people who, like, know each other and are exes or in some way, like, layer in a story or complexity. And this was just the thing that started to kill romantic comedies in the 90s was they immediately met each other and they immediately hated each other. And how much time or effort did it spend explaining why? And this movie is just like, well, they just hate each other.
No, wait a minute. Let me go back, though, to Karen's very smart question about what does this mean that these two have appeared in a movie? What does this say about the Gen X actors? I think it's actually sad on some level that they are not getting their rightful... you know, mid to late life acting roles where they get to just coast and make a bajillion dollars at the box office, which is what I think, like, people like Jack Nicholson have gotten to do in certain movies, De Niro, like, all of those
all
kind
those
of
baby boomers.
Yes, all the boomers.
With, like, Nancy Meyer movies.
Right. And these two are relegated to a video on demand, like, kind of real basic shot in 9 days BS.
Only
and, like, is there?
You can only watch it
Keanu
in Burbank at 5 or 7 p.m.
No,
at a real movie theater.
Sweet Jesus. I don't think there's enough loyalty to Gen X actors. It makes me wonder.
I think you guys forget Keanu was in Something's Gotta Give. So, I mean, he has been offered the opportunity. He was the young hot, you know.
But he was the young hot guy in it.
He's not getting to be the older.
It was still a boomer-centered film.
But the thing is that...
But where's the Gen X boomer film? Do you know
what
I mean?
We need that to be written. I would prefer that it wasn't a straight white male who did it. Mm-hmm. I think that they, you know... We didn't really answer this question. Like, what does it feel like watching these people since I grew up on these people? And it's so funny how much the entertainment industry has let me down that I expect. Like, I didn't watch this movie because the premise sounded cool. Actually, the premise did sound cool. But then even when the movie was
shitty. They fucked the premise up.
Fucked the premise up. But even the movie being as shitty as it was, I still, they're a delight to see. I'm delighted when I see them. I still like seeing Keanu working. I still like to see Winona. Because think about it. People are dying. People are addicts. People are this and the other. And they had counted Winona out for a very long time.
True.
So I'm excited to see people that are comfortable to watch, which is why I tolerated this bullshit for as long as I did.
I still think they're both really good actors.
They're like, amazing. I love them both. Yeah. And this was like a terrible vehicle.
How could you heal this film? I think this film, if it had been opened up and we had had Catherine Hahn as her friend from college, if we had had, you know, people sort of like giving context to this and fun people, if fucking Sandra Oh had played Winona Ryder's role, like if Parker Posey, somebody who just like could make a little sweet, sweet love to the language and sell it, this could have been a movie that I found really charming. And as it was, it felt claustrophobic.
Yeah, it was so claustrophobic. It definitely needed just to be opened up in terms of people that they could bounce off of more.
Yeah.
Like, we don't even get the moment with the groom. And that seemed sort of like an easy slam dunk to me, for them to interact with the groom.
It also makes it hard to make a romantic comedy if you don't have a Baxter there, if you don't have, like, a false relationship. I think one of the smartest rom-coms of all time is The Philadelphia Story, because it gives you four people that allows for two possible, like, and like romantic situations, so you legitimately don't know.
One of the things that this exposes to us is that, like, the romantic comedy cannot subsist on the strength of two charming, charismatic, and attractive people.
Disagree.
Alone. They're just like two people can't fucking hold it together, because especially two people talking ad nauseum about, like, things that have, like, absolutely no charm or delight in it.
They have never... Here are two people that I'm not caping for, but I'm caping for in this instance because I have to sort of fight for them in this instance. They have always been more successful in smaller films. They have always given better performances. I think about A Scanner Darkly. Like, they were really good in that movie. That movie is counterculture, doesn't really make sense to a wider audience, but for us little culty people, like, you know, the people who liked Cusco, like, that kind of movie is interesting for them, and they work better tightly held in that. I don't think that Winona should be extended beyond her range, because it doesn't work any other way. She's not 15, and she's not an angelic, like, in that sense anymore. She was put on a huge pedestal at a very early age.
Even like Mermaids or Beetlejuice, when she was good in a comedy.
Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael.
The comedy happened
but
around
also just
her.
Just freaking Keanu can't handle these long monologues. I'm sorry, everybody's dissing on Winona, but like, Keanu is amazing and I love him. And he's like, you know, Pacific Islander guy, you know. But he can't do serious dialogue in extended stretches, particularly monosyllabic dialogue and extended stretches.
Talk that much in real life.
Yeah, in ways that, like, he just can't sell, like, someone who has searing things to say about freebies at weddings.
He loves stressing all of the syllables in a sentence, in a word. Like, he really will just hit all of the
cashews. Yeah. I just hope that Gen X can produce, like, a more romantic version, whatever that means, of this.
I think they kind of already did it with the Sunrise movies.
I think that's true. Like, I think Ethan Hawke really could have been the guy who, like,
he could have done this. He could have nailed this.
Winona Ryder was the first person contracted to do this film, and she brought Keanu in, and I'm like, actually, though, sadly, Ethan Hawke was the one who.
Why not Reality Bites Redux?
Yeah.
So we all, to some extent, hated this craptastic film. you are listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back with Jams and All Abouts after this.
Wow. Welcome, everyone, to the live wrestling spectacular in Los Angeles.
So far, the world's most boring wrestling podcast has been destroying the competition.
Isn't there anyone who can save us from this travesty?
Wait, could it be?
It's Tights and Fights, the perfect wrestling podcast.
Tights and Fights is here to save us from the monotony of boring wrestling podcasts with hilarious conversations.
Woke trips through the history of wrestling.
And joke about the finer points of people wearing spandex.
What a match!
And the Tights and Fights podcast will be back every week.
Thursdays on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts. Please, these hosts have families.
Tights and Fights podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell Rorabaugh Lopez.
Margaret Wappler Earl Branum Mitchell Tongson.
Karen Tongson Kessler Lily Corky Muzerati.
All right. Now, normally on Pop Rocket, at this point in the show, I ask, what is your current jam? But since we had new business in the All About portion of the show...
Ugh, I'd almost forgotten.
Karen will never forgive us.
I will give people the option of a jam or an all about, or as we like to call it, a jam about.
Jam about.
Winter Mitchell, what is your jam about?
My jam about is about episode 6 of Forever, the new Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph show that I seem to love and most people do not.
I hate it.
I love this show because...
Everybody's so testy. Is there like some sort of Mercury in retrograde?
Yeah, it's not the Mercury in retrograde. I think it's Venus.
Okay.
And also, this has just been a shitty month. September has been terrible.
Yeah.
And by the way, just as a reminder, hashtag stop Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
I loved this show because, I mean, I've been reticent to talk about marriage because I don't want to be that person. But, you know, as a newlywed, I really relate to already the monotony of marriage because I've known my partner for so long and I've loved him for so long and we've dealt with both our ups and downs. So there was no honeymoon period. I think we were super, 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 super sweet and saccharine to each other the first 2 weeks of actually being married. But then we kind of rolled right into the mundane portion of marriage because we're so busy. And, you know, I understood what this show was trying to express and portray. I can't talk too much about it because I would spoil it immediately. It's that spoilery. It's probably one of the most spoilery shows.
It's super spoilery.
Slate has a really good article about how the premise of the show is the spoiler.
Yeah.
And so it is kind of unfair because it means you can't criticize it or review it.
Yeah.
Because to do so would be to talk
Which
about.
Which is genius and only smart people can accomplish. Episode 6 does something with a show that only has about 8 or 9 episodes in its entire season that it doesn't usually, most shows don't usually do. And it has a capsule episode that talks about, that centers on characters that aren't even in the show, never appear again, and aren't a part of the central narrative. And it's called Andre and Sarah. And the characters are portrayed by Jason Mitchell and Hong Chow. And this episode in particular centers around the real estate agents who sort of are circling each other and have like a meet cute. It's an extended meet cute that lasts many, many years and has an ending that is, it just jerks so hard at that.
It's
heart.
Very consequential.
Yeah.
In the, not only in that bottle episode, yeah. but in the overall arc of the show.
Yes. Yes. And I really, really enjoyed watching this episode. I've never seen God and so the chemistry between them and just sort of the conversation between them actually felt like love. And that's the part that resonated for me. It kind of gave me hope. And I think people are seeing the series differently than others based on whatever experience you bring to the table. But I felt like that was hope because it really gave Maya's character a sense of, okay, what if you didn't? What if you don't? Mm-hmm. And I'd also felt real watching a couple meet under the circumstances that Sarah and Andre did and have that connection and stoke those flames and still do the right thing and have the end result of what the end result was. I just really, really appreciated that episode. It was really poignant and beautiful.
Karen Tongson, what is your jam about?
My jam about this week, actually, I have to say, I went and saw two films this weekend. I thought that I would prefer one over the other, and I ended up like being completely wrong.
Okay.
I saw Lizzie, which I was very excited about in our fall preview. It's horrific. People know that I've already talked about this, that like it's like seeing the two best actresses at your high school, like, you know, perform the shit out of themselves in The Crucible, which is otherwise a terrible setting for this talent.
Yeah.
Okay. But the other film that I saw, which was an incredible setting for talents who may otherwise be construed as dubious, is the new Paul Feig film, A Simple Favor, starring Anna Kendrick and, lo and behold, Blake Lively. Plus, it also features Crazy Rich Asians' hottest British accented dude, Henry Golding. Essentially, Anna Kendrick's character and Blake Lively's character are both moms who have kids at like some kind of fancy school, like maybe in New York or like Connecticut or something, like somewhere on the East Coast. Anna Kendrick, being her dorky self, is like a mom who vlogs about like making cookies and shit like that and over volunteers for things for their kids. And Blake Lively is the hot shit, I work in Manhattan mom with amazing fucking clothes, who's like constantly doing like kind of post-millennial Marlena Dietrich with her look. And anyway, the two become friends awkwardly, and there's just a lot of stuff that ensues. Eventually, Blake Lively's character asks Anna Kendrick for a simple favor and says, will you watch my son? And henceforth, all sorts of insanity ensues. And there's a lot of like kind of questioning, doubting. There's so much camp in this. At first, it seems serious and like it's just going to be like your typical, again, kind of Gone Girl mystery. But it just becomes this wonderful, campy, dark, comedic thing that makes everyone shine.
That sounds wonderful.
Nominating Anna Kendrick for Pop Rocket Seal of Approval because I want to vote nay.
Yes.
Margaret Wappler, what is your jam about?
I know you guys talked about Insecure a few weeks ago, but I wasn't here, and I want to give the show lots of shout-outs right now because it's so good. And what, it's only got like two or three episodes left?
So many!
It is.
And I just really like where they've gone with the third season. Third seasons are hard, right? Like, it's just, you're already in the groove of the show. It's hard to make the characters still feel fresh. What I love about the show is how much they have taken Issa's character and just thrown different challenges at her, but challenges that still feel like playing into her character. Mm-hmm. She would absolutely be a Lyft driver. She would absolutely quit that job in just kind of an impulsive, half-assed type of way. I love Kelly. She's becoming my favorite. Natasha Rothwell.
Yeah.
Yes, she just gets all she gets all the great lines, but I also think she just delivers the lines
super
well.
She got to beat the shit out of a Jill Stein supporter.
She did, and also you better midnight train these motherfucking cupcakes to the table.
Brilliant. So good. It's such a great show. It's so tight right now. I think what is so commendable too is that they brought Lawrence back, which of course makes the Lawrence Hive people really happy. And I don't feel like I'm a Lawrence Hive person. Like, I don't know. I'm not that crushy on him at all, but
he's fine as fuck.
He's so hot.
See, I'm more on Team Nathan right now.
Girl, he a convict. I'm completely convinced of it.
He might be. But at any rate, I like the fact that Lawrence is back that's not an easy thing to do all the time with bringing the ex back, like, and having it still be interesting. They bring him back and immediately, I mean, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but not too big of a spoiler. He gets chlamydia and you see him making his calls to his former people and being like, whoops, sorry, might want to get checked out. And I love that because you always see men hoeing around on shows with no consequences.
Yeah.
They never have to worry about shit. And women are always the people worrying about disease and pregnancy and blah, 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 blah. And here he is. And, like, granted, like, they didn't have to show him making those phone calls. A lot of guys wouldn't make those phone calls, but it tells you so much about his character that he would make those phone calls.
Yeah.
And, two, it's just the consequences. It's real. It's real life.
It's a great show. My Jam About is not about a great show. My Jam About, as you guys know, I do not like dogs. I do not like cats. I like children. I like videos about children on YouTube.
You can like them all, you know.
No, I can't. So, like, my All About this week is this thing called Hi-Ho Kids Try. And they are just videos of children, like, 4 to 7, trying things, having them introduced to them. It's basically the old BuzzFeed game of people eat foods that they are not, like, used to.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very, like, ethnically and racially diverse cast of kids. And seeing these kids encounter food in the way that they encounter it is fucking delightful. What you are watching for is Maddox, who sees a gigantic crab claw and is like, oh, mommy eats those at the Chinese buffet. Or, like, you know, the pride that he experiences telling everybody about, oh, those are dumplings, and I eat those when I am in China. Like, super fun. Also seeing kids...
Is he a Hapa kid or just...
He's Chinese-American.
Okay.
There is Crystal, who is 7, Filipina, loves to sing.
She does.
Like, like,
she'll be on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the reunion show.
The best moments... Karen, the best moments from Crystal are, A, when they were doing Puerto Rican food, like... The way her face lights up when she hears lechon is just, like, like adorable. And then also, they also sort of, like, introduce them to people like Macklemore, drag queens, blah, blah, blah. Crystal. And the thing is she's, like, a little bit older than the rest of them. She's, like, 7. But, like, when they were talking to the drag queen, she was like, so, you're gay? And it was the best kind of, like, didn't ask a question. She was like, I'm Crystal. Fact. I get this. Like, I understand what's going on. And it was, like, so charming. And seeing these kids engage honestly with being able to ask questions, like, of the drag queen. One of them was, like, can only a gay be a drag queen? And it's wonderful that, like, children can,
smart
like...
Smart question.
It's a smart question.
That's so smart.
And it's a great, like, starting point for a conversation. And also seeing these kids encounter foods and stuff from outside of their culture. And, like, a lot of it is playing the gross out game, which I find tiring. But what's far more interesting is seeing kids who really are willing to pick up a fish with eyes and try it and figure out that it's good. It's very delightful.
No.
I should not be watching videos of children on YouTube, but I love it. All right. You've been
as long as you're watching it in the spirit of what we prefer your viewership would be about.
Winter.
Is that weird?
You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Margaret Wappler, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh, and Karen Tongson. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. It was really touch and go there for a couple of weeks review-wise. Fortunately, we do have listeners who care enough about Margaret's health to write them. Listeners
She's
like...
She's looking very pink
Not
these
dead
days.
Yet.
Zach,
not dead yet. Taking 3-hour naps.
Listeners like Zach Hip, who writes, Pop Rocket is the only podcast that keeps me abreast of the sweet life of Zach and Cody. and Movie Rob 79, who said, I started listening to Pop Rocket at the start of the summer, and I don't know how I've missed it all this time. I eagerly awaited the Summer Jams episode, and it was worth the wait. I'm officially hooked, and as a pop culture loving gay man, I have to nominate Guy Branum as the king of gay men everywhere. Oh. He is a treasure. We all know that homosexuality is a republic.
But we would still never give you
a positive homosexual review of our episode of the Summer Jams, which, you know, we've had some controversy.
That's lovely, but you'd still never get the seal of approval, Guy.
With the subject, Louis Mal is dead? Seg409 writes, I love the fact that it is understood that everyone on the panel will know who Candace Bergen's husband was. And my favorite review, The Flan wrote, still going strong, and guys, book is killer. So yes, if you're still listening to the podcast and you have not bought my book, what the fuck is your problem? Buy my book. Thank you, Flan. So guys, please, we need a review of any kind. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and get in the discussion. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our show is edited by the delightful Shayna Deloria, who I've met twice now, and our senior producer is Laura Swisher, who I've met like 1,000 times.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.